From Hobart, Tasmania, we welcome you to this highlights package from the Blind Citizens Australia National Convention. The convention is proudly sponsored by Vision Australia. Your hosts are Vaughan Bennison and Jonathan Craig.
Hello and welcome to this first highlights package from the Blind Citizens Australia Convention of 2019. I'm Vaughan Bennison, coming to you from the convention room at the Old Woolstore Hotel in Hobart. Joining me is Jonathan Craig. Jonathan.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Now, Jonathan, not only is this your first time doing the broadcast from the convention, but this is your first convention full stop. What do you think the convention will bring you?
Well, I've been metaphorically very wide-eyed because this is my first convention, and it's really exciting because advocacy is such a huge part of what Blind Citizens Australia does. But what's I think is really remarkable about this convention is the sense of community. And community is such a big part as well of what BCA does. And it's so fun and exciting to have everybody gathered here together.
You're here partly, Jonathan, as the editor of Blind Citizens News, and are you sort of feeling inclined to think that perhaps you'll get some good stories for Blind Citizens News out of the convention?
Absolutely. I have been talking to a lot of people already today and look forward to some more conversations soon, and I'm super excited to hear from many of you both during the convention and afterward about some of the things that we've been talking about in previous editions of Blind Citizens News, as well as in the panels that are happening this weekend.
Well, perhaps we should hear from our first guest today. We spoke not long ago with Doug McGinn.
Yes, because this is actually the first BCA convention that's ever been held in Tasmania. So we asked Doug how that felt to him.
It means a fair bit of excitement at the moment, but like every organising situation, excitement is just overwhelmed with organisation at the moment. Once the conference starts proper this afternoon, that's where when all the efforts start to come to fruition, it'll be great at that time. It is a huge moment for local Tasmanians. Obviously, we've recently got the branch up and going again. It's a huge thing. I think we were talking before, Vaughan, that it's 44 years since the inception of the NFBCA, which is now the BCA, and for us to hold the convention down here in a fairly small population, it is a great thing, Vaughan, yes.
We've got roughly 15 people from Tasmania attending the convention. That's a pretty good record, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a great proportion, and if you sort of think about the size of the state, we do have a large population of, a large proportion of people with a vision impairment, but it's a really good turnout for Tasmanians. But equally as well, though, Vaughan, it is a fantastic turnout for people from the Northern Ireland, which is just wonderful. And I think, Vaughan, as well, we've got some New Zealand people coming over for the conference as well.
So I believe we've got roughly 120 people attending the conference, and many of those will have been... many of those will be coming to Hobart for the first time. What would you say to those people?
We've got some not so wonderful weather on Saturday and Sunday, but Friday and Monday and Tuesday, we've bookended it with some wonderful weather, which is a good thing, possibly beyond our control, but we'll pretend it's from us. Where the conference is being held is very close to the CBD and some also wonderful scenic touristy areas, Salamanca and the Wharves. Hopefully some people might take some time out from the conference and go for some scenic walks. And it is just a great place to have a convention. It is so close to some lovely areas, botanic gardens and the city. Yes.
So Jonathan, Doug seemed pretty positive about the impact on Hobart of having the convention, as well as for the actual attendees at the convention.
Yes, he did. So the convention kicked off at 1:30 p.m. With two concurrent workshops, one on audio description and one on doing it our way, on independence for people who are blind and vision impaired.
I attended the audio description workshop, Jonathan, and one of the things that I found really interesting about that was the discussion around what audio description should and shouldn't be, especially in terms of the fact that there's no audio description on Australian television. Now, most of you will know that I've had a lot of discussions on this point. I've brought it up on New Horizons a number of times, but there's still no audio description on Australian television. But we didn't so much talk about that as talked about how audio description works and what it lends to a production, particularly a movie or a TV show or something like that. Also, at the same time, was another workshop around independence. Blind Citizens Australia Advocacy Officer Ricky Chaplin co-chaired that session.
I'd like to start off by reading the Facebook post which was responsible for the germination of this workshop. It really got a lot of discussion going on Facebook, and it's great that this turned into a workshop because it's certainly an issue that I've been conscious of for many, many years, so I'm really glad that it's being brought to light today, so to speak. So this Facebook post says, "Dear blind people, some of us have other disabilities. Some of us aren't as good at mobility or cooking or technology as you are. Some of us might request accommodations that you find laughable. When we ask for those accommodations, don't tell us that we're making the blind community look bad. If we all continue to uphold the belief that good blind people are productive and independent, our advocacy is always going to be excluding someone. As Sassy Outwater put it, there's one way to be blind. There's no one way to be blind. Instead of denigrating another blind person who has disabilities or marginalisations that you don't, how about lifting them up and being a good ally? I thought I'd take this a step further. Now, Steve and I have had a running joke for a long time about what it would be like to have a town exclusively lived in by blind people. We call this town Blinkton.
I'd live there if I could.
Well, the very English version I thought might be Blinkton-on-Sea. Now, all the blind people and the vision impaired people in Australia moved to Blinkton. And at the beginning, life was pretty ideal. Everyone was sort of wrapped up in the idea that they had their own community and that everything was accessible. There were no Alberts. Yeah. But over time, we started to see these little cracks forming, these divisions. And they weren't about materialism. It was a different form of division. Instead, we started to see comments made behind people's backs about how this person or that person couldn't do a particular skill and how bad that was and how they should be able to do it. And to create a very oversimplistic picture, instead of the haves and the have-nots, imagine the cans and the can-nots. So what I'm thinking is, we don't really want a community like that. It's a pretty, a pretty terrible place to be, to feel that you can't turn to other people who are experiencing similar things to what you are to ask for assistance, to confide in about issues that you might be having difficulties with. So I thought a good topic for this discussion today would be, what does it take to create a community where acceptance of where a person is in their life, of their circumstances, of their context, is taken, you know, we can take that for granted. I asked Steve to help me co-facilitate this workshop because, as many of you know, Steve has an extra disability. He has a bone condition. And I thought Steve would be able to give us some really good insight about, you know, what life's been like for him.
Yeah, as Ricky says, I identify with having a bone condition. I travel as independently as I possibly can. I live close to a train station, so I can use the train to get to work, and I do that fairly regularly. But sometimes it's just not as simple as to say, we'll go out for dinner somewhere, and we'll just get the bus from here, this stop, and we'll all go back to a certain point. For me, you know, because I guess of my travel confidence, and there's a lot of factors impact on my travel confidence, and it's not that I'm scared of using public transport. Obviously, I use the train quite frequently, and I can usually always do that. But for me, to get around a local area without good knowledge of it can often be detrimental, because if I walk into an area without if I walk into an area without thinking about this carefully or planning it carefully, it may mean that I have an accident. And if I have an accident and if I have a fall, it may mean that I can't get back up. I may have to, without the assistance of an ambulance, I may not be able to get away from it. So obviously the first thing for me is always to consider safety. And sometimes that can have other impacts on your travel confidence when you've been doing that. When you've had to consider that for long enough, sometimes it can have a detrimental effect, just over time. I try to negate it as much as I can. And where I know that I've got a place that I can get around, I always sort of attempt to do so as easily as much as I can. But for some people, I've noticed that over time, some people have, been very, very quick to judge that. And they've basically said, well, look, come on now, it's not that hard. We're all doing it. People who haven't lived that experience come into life with a certain, I think, set of preconceived biases and norms about how we live. And I think what it leads to is, as Ricky said, it's about what we expect from each other. Instead of bagging each other or not being supportive to each other or with each other, we need to be, kind of considerate of differences, and we need to be considerate of people who may not necessarily keep up or be, for want of a better term, super blindies. And it leads to a whole bunch of other stuff as well. It's not just physical, it's other confidence levels too. I mean, other people have trouble cooking. Other people have trouble using accessible technology. And we have to be very careful not to judge them for that either. And it's all about how you want to live your life. I mean, I had my classic example is my grandmother lived to be 83 years old. Never identified as having a vision impairment, never identified as having any other disability. But she also never actually learned to drive a car. She never drove in her life. She always either relied on her husband or her daughter to drive her around, one of her daughters, or she got the bus. So if it's okay for her to make a life choice about her independence as a member of the able-bodied community, what is so difficult? What is so difficult about us deciding that today we want to catch a taxi? I want to catch a taxi to work today because it's raining and I don't feel comfortable walking out on the rain where I might have an accident, because I know that I've had them in the past.
And then later in the afternoon, we had a workshop with New Zealand musician Stephen Bennett talking about Braille music and how technology is changing it and why it is still important and necessary today.
Have you had any experience with the technology around Braille music?
No, I haven't, but I was very fascinated by some of the comments and suggestions that Stephen Bennett and others in the session had.
And the other workshop was about the diverse experience of blindness.
Yes, that was chaired by Helen Ferris and was a workshop on experiences of living with blindness or vision impairment from different cultures and backgrounds.
And Helen Ferris, of course, is the Vice President of Blind Citizens Australia. Earlier, Jonathan, you mentioned John Simpson. He's the President of Blind Citizens Australia. He was involved in the panel for the audio description workshop, which was chaired by CEO Emma Bennison.
One of BCA's campaign strategies in regard to audio description is raising awareness of alternative audiences for the service. Katie Ellis, Associate Professor for Curtin University, has been doing some intriguing research involving focus groups. Emma asked her to tell us about some of that research.
In addition to running focus groups with people who were blind or had low vision, we had focus groups of people who were television fans, so people who watched a lot of television, binge watchers, self-identified, which was also several of our blind and low vision people said, but hey, I'm a television fan too. And we said, well, go in that focus group as well. And we talked to film students, we talked to parents of young children who thought they didn't have enough time to sit down and watch TV anymore now they had a newborn or a young toddler. We talked to a few people with autism and also people who liked audiobooks. And so what we found through the research was a lot of people saying, audio description is great if you want to multitask while you're watching TV. And I sort of have this thing that I say is that the more TV you watch, and we're watching a lot of TV these days, the more TV you're missing out on, because you're trying to get through it so quickly that you're missing out on all this information on the screen. But you're also doing it while, you know, you're cooking dinner or you're doing all sorts of other things. Our respondents, they were really positive about audio description. A lot had never, ever heard of it before, which as a researcher I thought was one of the most significant findings of our research, was that people had no idea what this was. And they said the audio description is great for when you're cooking dinner and you want to keep binge watching. You know, we had people who like knitting and watching TV, and when you're knitting you apparently look down at the knitting a lot and then look back up and may have missed something on the TV. We had people doing craft, as I said, the parents of the young children. We even had one musician who said audio description would be really great for while he's practicing his guitar.
Multitasking
in the extreme there.
One of the things that was discussed at this workshop were the barriers that face audio description. Why don't we have audio description on Australian television, and why isn't audio description more prevalent across the community?
The two biggest barriers are attitude. You know, we have audio description. We might not have it available on free-to-air television, but a lot of the shows that we're watching on free-to-air television have been audio described. So it's getting the tracks isn't the problem, it's that they're not being distributed on our televisions. And for me, the only reason I can think for that is there's an attitude problem. And that does tie into the lack of awareness that we've been talking about. You know, whenever I go and talk to people in Australia about audio description, normally it takes about 5 to 10 minutes for them to realise I'm not talking about captions, you know. I'll be having really energetic conversations with politicians about audio description, how we absolutely need it. And they're like, yeah, I use it on the plane because it's so loud on the plane.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, so I think...
I feel your pain.
You know, it's kind of a catch-22 situation. No one knows what audio description is because it's not on Australian television.
Yeah, and
it's not on Australian television because no one knows what it is.
That's so right. Yeah, that's right.
I was just going to say, you know, in a theatre production, you can see the Auslan interpreter out there on stage.
Yes, that's
with,
right.
You know, signing whatever it is.
Yeah.
But audio description, it's someone in the background who put in the earpiece.
But yet, you know, you go to New Zealand and people you talk to in the street just know what audio description is because it is available in New Zealand. So
that's right. There's an awareness.
Yeah.
John, what do you think about the age-old barriers that are quoted as being the issue, you know, technical constraints and cost issues? How do you respond to those?
The television industry in this country hides behind technical constraints to cover up policy decisions that they make. And I'll give you a clear example, and it's by no means the only example here. When a television broadcaster gets a license, they're allocated a certain amount of bandwidth to deliver their product. And as we all know, they take policy decisions as to how that bandwidth is broken up. So the Channel 7 network has Channel 7, 7.2, whatever their other ones are called, and they sell some of it off for advertising and they sell some of it off to racing.com. The SBS break theirs up differently and they have audio feeds. The ABC have a mix of video and audio feeds, you know, ABC for kids, at the News 24 outlet and so on and so forth. And they run audio streams of some of their online and digital radio outlets. And to use the ABC as an example, they run two audio streams. One used to be Classic FM, and one for quite some time has been their jazz stream. It's hard to get it, but if you can find the audience research, and I found it in an annual report a couple of years ago, the audience reach of that jazz service is less than we would expect the audio reach to be if that particular audio channel was given over to audio description. And that's a policy decision. But they come back after the trial and say, oh no, we don't have the bandwidth, there's guard bands you've got to put between these, and we're getting interference here and there, and so on and so forth. So they all get, all of the five networks get the same amount of bandwidth, and they divide it up how they see fit for their commercial and, you know, whatever policy reasons and so forth. So that's why I say it's a load of rubbish, because it's a policy decision.
One of the things that Blind Citizens Australia is well known for in the community is streaming its national and state conventions. Stephen Jolly has hosted many of these stream programs, and he's hosting again this year. We caught up with him just before the start of the convention out in the Rose Garden, which is a nice picturesque area outside, right opposite the convention room.
Right back in the early days, we used to record the event and make tapes available to people who weren't there. And it's one of our strong mantras, really, is to take the event beyond the venue. Now we can realise that dream of years ago and give the event to people at the time that it's going on.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? You've hosted quite a number of these streams now. You've had a long history in broadcasting. Do you think that your history has set you up well for this type of thing?
It's given me a bit of experience, shall we say. In the early days, we broadcast some of the event live, usually the opening session. So I sort of got a feel for it then. And yes, there have been some very interesting events over the years. I was in Australia while we were relaying the opening of the World Blind Union General Assembly from Montreal in 1996. That was very memorable. And then, of course, we had the World Blind Union General Assembly in Melbourne in 2000. There's been lots of events, lots of BCA events over the years, so it's good to be doing another one. I'm particularly looking forward to some sessions on Saturday. The keynote address is from the head of IRA, the CEO of IRA, and he's going to be talking about this 21st century technology and how it can be available to people with a simple device like an iPhone. I'm also looking forward to the address from the Human Rights Commissioner talking about a project looking at human rights and technology. And then we'll have updates in the afternoon from some of the blindness organisations. Then on Sunday, there'll be a bit more conversation around policy, and I think that'll be very interesting too.
For the first time in quite a long time, some of the RPH network stations will be taking your feed this time.
Yes, I believe so, and I know for our friends here in Hobart, you'll be taking the coverage, the opening, from tomorrow morning. The session commences at 9 o'clock. Other stations, I know the Iris Digital in Melbourne and Adelaide will be taking most of the proceedings, I believe. So looking forward to that, and there'll be a number of ways you'll be able to access the stream.
Perhaps you could give us the website where people can find the stream.
Yes, all people have to do is go to bca.org.au with the usual stuff at the front. And then there is a section down below the New Horizons section, which is our weekly radio program, that you know a lot about, Vaughan.
I know a bit about it, yeah.
Yes. Below that, there is the links to the stream.
And you can hear Stephen on the stream tomorrow morning from 8:30. Now, this convention wouldn't be possible without some of our major sponsors, one of whom is Visibility, which some of you may know as Guide Dogs Tasmania. We asked Visibility's Naomi Gilson what it means to sponsor this convention.
It's very exciting for us to be a sponsor of the convention this year, as we feel it's really important to support the communities that allow us to help work with those people. So really, we're here as a to say thank you to the people that allow us to come into their lives and to help in ways that we can. But basically, really being a sponsor of this convention and of BCA is really about us saying thank you for letting us be a part of your lives.
Naomi, the tagline for this BCA convention is you can do it your way. I wonder what that means to you as a service provider, because that encompasses a whole lot of things, including independence, technology. What do you think about that slogan?
Our services are really around supporting a person in what their individual goals are. So what we look at doing is being a spot where people can come and they can find out about latest technologies and bits and pieces. So we see ourselves as a bit of a conduit to finding out some of those bits of equipment and strategies for people so that they have somewhere that they can come and find some answers to those questions. We really work with people on their own journey. So what we find is most of our clients are actually the experts in their own lives and in their own world, and so really for us it's just saying how can we support you.
BCA has been around for 44 years. Visibility has been around for more than 100 years, which is incredibly impressive. Mm. I just wondered if you could speak briefly to the significance of that history, that long history, and how it can inform our actions now and into the future as well.
We have seen a lot of changes in the way the world has changed, and also in the way that people are accessing assistance. Right back at the beginning of when we sort of started, it was more of a, this is what you should do, this is this is how we think things should work. And now it's really taken a major turnaround to, what would you like? It is your life and it's your world, and how would you like to do that, and how can we support you to do that? So the history has allowed us to gain an understanding over a long period of time of some of the challenges that people face. And I think also a big role that we have is in advocacy for people. So in being able to actually stand up and say, well, actually, there are a lot of things in our society that aren't set up in the right way, that aren't inclusive. And I think we have a big role. And I think that history has helped us to have a better understanding so that we can actually then support people going into the future.
What services does Visibility provide to blind and vision impaired people?
So with Visibility, it looks after our low vision and blindness products. So basically we have occupational therapists that work with clients on all aspects of activities of daily living. We also have a counsellor that now works with us. We have orientation and mobility instructors who are also here at the conference. We also have an assistive technology person who is really, he uses the assistive technology himself, so that's great for advocating for others. So we now have a wider range of that equipment available to people here in Tasmania. We also have a children's therapy service as well, which also has physios and speech pathologists as well. And we also have a disability employment service under the COACT name.
Well, Jonathan, we've come to the end of this broadcast from the first day of the Blind Citizens Australia National Convention of 2019. We're here at the Old Wool Store in Hobart, Tasmania. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9 and also on Sunday.
Yes, that's right. Just a half an hour program today, but both of those programs will be an hour long. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We'll see you tomorrow.
That ends this highlight package from the National Convention of Blind Citizens Australia. We thank our sponsors, Vision Australia, Guide Dogs Australia and Visibility Tasmania. For more information about BCA, please visit our website, bca.org.au.